WNST, Towson Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are positively doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour, and we're going to be at Coco's this week with our mayor, Brandon Scott. But after the holiday, Black Friday, getting up to Abingdon with our friends at Conrad's, and then on December 3rd, finally making our way back to Cockeysville, a very familiar crab cake at Pappas in Cockeysville. All of it sponsored, of course, by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. Let yourself play. This guy made Maryland home for a little period of time back in the formative days with the Washington Times. He is a baseball insider, so inside that he got captured in a picture with Rob Manfred and covering all things World Series. I wanted to give him a chance to cool down a little bit. He covered sports for a long, long time at the Washington Times and Sports Business Journal. Now at Sport Business as the editor on this side of the pond, as they say, and always a baseball fan and a great guy to talk baseball with. You welcome Eric Fisher back onto the program. You can follow him out on Twitter as well as at Sport Business. What's going on, man? You got captured in that Manfred picture. It's like a million people have said, hey, there's Fisher. Look, he's with Manfred, huh?
Yeah, you know, I was in the middle of a fairly lengthy conversation with Tony Clark, the head of the players union. You know, Rob Manfred came by. They had a brief interchange talking about the roof status for game one of the World Series in Houston. You know, the AP shot a photo and it's been everywhere.
Well, and there's news, right? So when you're sniffing around the commissioner any year, right around the end, there's always something interesting. Between all of the politics and chops and cheating in Houston and, big markets not being there and being a little bit of a southern thing and the former president trying to get involved and do a fly through, all that went on, we have like labor dispute again, like, right? And as much as I try to stay up on all things Masson, and you've been a hell of a resource for that. And as far as I know, the young Angelos family has not paid the young learners any money lately anyway. This labor thing, dude, I'm 30 years into doing radio. Next month, it'll be my 30th anniversary. And I covered all of these strikes and moving franchises, all this stuff that didn't feel like the reason I had football cards and baseball cards. But the baseball labor disputes going back to 81 and my dad canceling Sporting News because he was so pissed at baseball. All these years later, I've lost track. You know what I mean? Like, so can you prime me up to fly me in as a guy who knew a lot about Lords of the Realm and a lot about Peter Angelos' involvement the early part of the century and trying to keep labor peace and all of that? Where are they as we go to what news sounds like there's going to be another fist fight?
Yeah, so we've had a long period of peace. We had a deal in 95-96, and you know, it's been a quarter century of relative peace since then.
Feels like it's been acrimonious then, right? I'm the one that's lost in the 90s.
Well, there's been a number of deals, you know, since then. There was a tough negotiation in 02, and then we had 6 and 11, that went in 16, that went a little smoother. Some of those went right down to the wire, but they were able to get those deals done each and every time. Over time, what has happened is, you know, a number of the economics have swung in favor of management. And there's also actually concerns on both sides of the table as to how to have proper competitive integrity, competitive parity, but very different ideas of how to get there. So now we're at this point where, you know, as we're talking here, we're inside of 3 weeks of the expiration of the current deal. That's going to be up December 1st. And at that point, we just don't know what's going to happen. There is some sentiment out there in the market that we could be looking at our first work stoppage since that 94-95 strike. But we also had the situation where management lost a lot of money during 2020 because of no attendance and COVID. So the stakes are a little bit different this time. But again, we're still looking at a situation where there was much more disagreement and, you know, difference of vision in terms of how to move the game forward.
call me old school, Eric, but if Mark Belanger or Marvin Miller, who finally got in the Hall of Fame, did a flyby right now, and Kurt Flood and Andy Messersmith, and they bring McNally back, some of those cats from back in the mid-70s, maybe I could even bring Ken Singleton in the side door to discuss it, having been a part of all of that stuff back in the day, that the players just kicked their asses for 30 years after what was a little bit of a feudal colony back in the 60s, especially for people like my cousin with the Vec family in Chicago, Frank Robinson in Cincinnati, which is how they wound up in Baltimore. It took me most of my lifetime to figure that out. Steve Carlton winding up in Philadelphia, godforsaken place, that what they used to, how management and players interacted. Then there was the period of, we kicked your ass in 73, we'll fight you through the 70s, we'll beat you up in 81, and then we're going to clean your clock for 20 years. This give back or push back, the owners are so whole, right? I mean, if I sat here and talked about the amount of money the Angelos family has made, tax benefits, daddy's dying, kid's going to become an heir, move the team to Nashville, whatever's going to happen, nobody's losing money investing in baseball anymore. Like maybe back in the 70s when it was a little bit more of, hey, unless I have money from over in this other investment, my beer company, my other company, there really was some, we can't pay Jack Clark $2 million a year. You know what I mean? Because there wasn't that kind of revenue there. They didn't know what they were doing. Marketing logos, even selling team jerseys. They just weren't good at any of it. Selling wall spaces. They didn't do it. But the cable television revenue and the modern revenue, that the players got so much of it. You know, there were so many Chris Davises that cashed a lot of money, and you know, all the David Segee era players that got $50, $80, $100 million for sort of hanging around. The owners have sort of caught up to that a little bit, really, over the last 10, 15 years in using every, we're not going to start their clock early, we're not going to give Manny Machado that money, let the Padres go do it, let somebody else go do it. And the tanking part of getting back to competitive balance where you are. But part of this is that the owners are making so much money, they don't really need to sign those expensive ball players so much, do they?
Well, it depends on the market. You get, you know, and that's part of the issue, that, you know, you listen to Scott Boras and you have to take a lot of what he says necessarily with a grain of salt. But by his estimate, we've got, you know, a little over of half of the 30 clubs actually trying. And then that leaves the other, you know, fairly large percentage, you know, not necessarily trying. But,
well, it doesn't feel baked up to me. I mean, I watch it or I don't watch it for what it's worth. I don't watch very often. But, I mean, come on. I mean, you can look at this and see who's trying and who's not. It's not, it's pretty out on the table, and you know, unless you're denying it, right?
Yeah, I mean, and again, you've got different, it's not necessarily an on-off switch, but there are varying levels of trying within that, I will submit. I think what's basically going on, to your point, is that, you know, we've had this sort of the, you know, extreme money ball situation and a real push towards the draft and, you know, sort of having, you know, talent in that sort of pre-arbitration phase and trying to milk every last, you know, ounce out of that and trying to get guys to sign long-term deals before, you know, pre-arbitration, you know, long-term deals. Management's gotten really, really good at that sort of thing.
Well, they're trying to do away with arbitration altogether, right? They've gutted minor league baseball. They've done all sorts of cost-saving measures, which are really profit-earning measures, not cost-saving.
Oh, 100%. And so, you know, they've gotten really good at, you know, sort of maximizing the sort of components of the current system. So now it's, you know, you've gotten a number of sort of, you know, I think what could be fairly called unintended consequences. So now it's just a matter of how you sort of correct that. And again, we're sitting in a situation here, you know, just a handful of days before the expiration of the deal with some, you know, still pretty widely varying degrees of how to fix that.
Eric Fisher's our guest. He's with Sport Business. Covers a lot of baseball stuff. I've used you as a resource for many, many years in regard to Masson and Masson money and the Orioles. I mean, they've gotten me to the fatigue point, you know, with 107 more losses this year and whatever they're doing and whenever they're going to bring up young guys and try again. And this whole notion that, like with the old man, there was, well, when we win again, we'll go sign a bunch of the real players. We'll bring in the Verlanders and the Scherzers. We'll sign existing players. You know, like, there's not even that thought that like the money that they're earning now, that they're pocketing now, they're going to come running back to throw back in. And then there's the whole where does the punishment begin when you start to spend money, which is what they've done at the top of the market that has going to create war with the players, right? Which is at least the Yankees and Dodgers, they used to pay good out there. Now everybody's kind of cutting because of the luxury tax, and that really hasn't helped the bottom get better. I mean, I've been arguing this on the radio for 30 years, beginning next month through the strike of 1994 and the original sin of sort of we're going to have a really widely disproportionate payroll, salary structure, team to team, and the competitive balance of this has always been a little askew. I mean, and now, if you don't have to spend money and your team's going to stink and you can make money, you can just say, well, we hired Mydell and Elias. You know, they banged on trash cans down in Houston. They seem to know what they're doing with these analytics things. We'll draft first every year because we'll stink bad enough to be that. And eventually, you know, we'll get 5 to 7 blue chip players and maybe we'll sign them. Or if we're Kansas City, maybe we won't. And we'll just move back into whatever we were. It's really weird. I mean, the whole expectation from a fan, or what they've moved their propaganda onto fans, calling me saying, "Oh, this is what you had to do." No, you didn't have to do it this way. This is just what they're telling you that they had to do, and they're still selling beer for $15. So I find the whole thing to be fascinating, because what if it never comes? If it never comes, the franchise is in trouble here.
Well, and so two teams that I think are really bear watching, regardless of how the whole macro situation bears out between management and labor, Seattle Mariners, Cincinnati Reds, both took a step forward this year, both sort of what could be fairly construed as on the cusp of contention and being like a legit playoff team. Seattle, you know, looking to add players, just added Ken Griffey to the ownership group. They got the All-Star game coming. They're spending money, buying, joining property, kind of looking to ramp up and try to make that next step and sort of fulfill a very long period in the wilderness. They've got the longest playoff drought in the league. Then you got the Reds, who were in a similar situation, and now the word on the street with them is that pretty much anything is available, and they're breaking it back down again without ever actually having the moment in the sun. And so that's really – that gets kind of what you're describing, and that's unfortunate. And I think what both sides would like to get to – and again, we – you know, big disagreement of how to get there – is more situations like the Mariners, that after a long – here in the wilderness, you get to a point where maybe something good's going to happen.
Eric, it's wild. You and I could sit here and, like, I blew my back out chasing the Rolling Stones around St. Louis the day that Tucker hit the kick. So I'm in a baseball-only city with baseball fans. The Cardinals had won like 17 games in a row that day. And I'm sitting there watching football in a place where they're suing football. And you and I could go back and forth for hours on the Kroenke situation and Mark Davis and the powers that – I mean, the NFL, that's been its own drama. I've covered a lot of that. I had Ken Belson on last week. I had David Steele on. I mean, I've been talking a lot of – NFL labor. I'll get Howard Belzer and those types on. But I really defer to you guys on the baseball side. And I'll just say this. My last name's Aparicio. I'm here. I built everything I built here around baseball 30 years ago. And it's been 3 decades now. And 27 of these years, Angelos has owned it. I mean, it's been we're going on, you know, almost a decade now of it being, you know, kind of not relevant again. Buck's 5 years gone now. So, and it doesn't look like it's coming anytime soon that they're going to get back to the 90 loss realm. You know, it's making that kind of progress. But the wildest thing for me is in, I guess, all of this, changing the rules, guy on second base in the 10th inning, 7-inning games, shifting of all of this. Just the fact that, like, it's been unchecked on the Baltimore side, that as to how this goes, it feels like there's nobody that cares. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know what they're saying to the mayor or the governor here or whatever. The ownership is completely not out in front of this in any way. They don't market in the off season. They kind of pull the shed down like an Ocean City business that shuts down in the winter. It's really weird. And I don't hear anybody talking about what the future, that any vision for what's going on here, where I see in Chicago, they're building a casino next to Wrigley Field. All that happened in Atlanta that made them a community and all that. Nobody's got a blueprint for like what they want to put in the parking lot or what the Angelos family's requesting of the state or what the bigger, better deal would be in Nashville. It's way too quiet here for my taste after losing this much. And I'm worn out. I'm like literally worn out. I have no fight left. I have no dog left in me.
I completely agree. And I remember it was probably about a year ago. I was on your show and I said at the time, and I'll stand by and say it again, that if you look at what the Astros did, the Cubs did, now the Mariners, you had ownership out there basically at every single chamber of commerce, Kiwanis Club, you name it, sort of get on board with us. This is the plan. You know, take the ride with us. We're building something. We're trying to do this. And it was in the case of both the Cubs and the Astros in particular, it was a very long, painful road that ultimately got there. But those owners were out there banging the drum, no pun intended, every step they could. And you got Orioles ownership that is, just to your point, nowhere to be found. And the same thing I said a year ago, I'll say again, like they're just MIA that if you, you know, I think, you know, given sort of this whole Moneyball era, that if it's going to take a multi-year process to get to someplace better, at least be out there selling the vision.
Yeah, and the losses stacking up and the lack of interest has taken a guy who's a lifer baseball guy that built a life. And in October, I hurt my back. That's where I was going with this. And I guess sitting and watching baseball all day and having not watched much of it, right? I mean, I'm not sitting and watching them lose 107 games. I mean, I watched a couple weeks in April. It comes on after Jeopardy. My wife puts it on for 10 minutes, and I hear the broadcasters, and Ben McDonald does a nice job. And, you know, they were stuck broadcasting road games in Baltimore in a studio. You know, like you can't see the ball when it goes up in the air. Garceau doesn't know what's going on because he's not at Fenway Park. He's at Camden Yards, and the game's at Fenway Park. So, like, watching it, listening to it, it's awful. They have no pitching. The game's changed a lot in regard to starting pitching. Every ad, and I can bitch to you because I haven't had you on in like a year. Every ad is a gambling ad. I've never gambled on baseball in my life. I've never known anybody that's – I'm in a baseball town. Nobody gambled on baseball here. Nobody ever called, hey, Nasty, you're in the locker room. Tell me about Surhoff's injury. I got 500 on the Brewers tonight. Like, that stuff never happened in baseball. Like, and now they're shoehorning the gambling part of this. In other places, like the Cubs think they're going to get rich on it. Good for them. But then October happened. I'm on my ass. I'm 53 years old. I've attended 90 World Series games. Like, really? Like, in the 90s, in the aughts? I didn't miss. I went to 15 years. I went to every World Series game. I got in my car, and I drove to Toronto in 93. I flew to Cleveland in 95, in Atlanta. I have pictures, all this stuff, all these games. And now the playoffs are going on, and I'm really injured. Like, on my back in massive pain, laying on ice. I couldn't work, couldn't do anything. And baseball's on. If it were the World Cup, I would have been flying a Tunisia flag at 2 o'clock and an Argentina flag at 6. And at 10 o'clock, I would have figured out where Ivory Coast is and Googled it, you know. And I would have been following the tournament. The baseball tournament happened, and the games were on at 1 and 4 and 7 and 10, and the Dodgers and the Giants and you know, the Rays. And there's nobody at the games. The empty seats. The games start, and I don't know who the players are. The pitchers are pitching an inning and two-thirds. The game's dragged on. I'm not really following the – I don't have baseball cards anymore, so I don't know who all these guys are. And I found it really weird that I couldn't get into it. And the shifting and the length of the games, and there was no action. I tried. I was on my ass and on my back. And the whole month I was thinking, I'm going to reach to you guys and talk to you. Are you still as fascinated by all of it and the strategy and the shifting as maybe you once were?
I am, but there is a significant pace issue. And having been it and watched a lot of the playoff games and having been at, you know, the World Series, that there is all these things that have happened and they've tried to do to improve pace. And it's not just the parade of pitching changes. There is just all of that stuff between pitches, and they're still letting batters step out of the box, and we can sort of break down, you know, all the individual components, but there is a huge pace problem. that
no one wants to own, though, really own, like really be the prick that ends it. I mean, the pitch clock and all that, but that's not going to get solved in this negotiation. The players are never going to give that. No.
Well, and again, it's not just one person. It's everybody having the ownership. It's the league. It's the players. It's the umpires, because they play a role in this too. It's television. It's, you know, because there's a lot of little things, and all those little seconds here and there and all of the other factors add up to something. It's not one cause. It's like 20 causes, but there is a significant pace problem. And I would say one of the things, to your point, sort of pulling away from this postseason, is, yeah, there was a lot of great games and a lot of great drama. But these games felt really long, and it wasn't. And again, it's not a duration thing. It's not how you don't just measure numbers, but it's much more of a vibe and feel thing. And the vibe and feel was just, it dragged.
Eric Fisher's here. Okay, so for leadership and your picture with Rob Manfred, he's running the place. Owners have changed, although I'm in Chicago all week. We're playing the Bears, right? So I've had Reinsdorf conversations, and whoever the powers that be that really run the Cubs and these quasi, you know, boards, chairmans of boards that run these teams and stuff. Different kind of fight than Charlie Finley and George Steinbrenner and Peter Angelos and, you know, name any of the protagonists, Reinsdorf, any of those guys that have been a part of Bud Selig, obviously an owner portrayed as a commissioner, and the fight that's gone on through the history of the sport that you've chronicled, that I know very well, Lords of the Realm. If you're a baseball, if you truly know anything about baseball, you've had to study the labor war. This is the one I don't understand so well, because I'm just not following. I don't follow the team, for crying out loud. Neither does anybody else. There's no demand for it here. But in jumping into this, where is Manfred's belly for war? He used to be a tough talker. I remember 20 years ago when he was younger and chippier, he was sort of the loudmouth on that side of the table at these spitting matches, which they used to do through the media. They used to be done through baseball writers. It used to be done through ESPN. Now they control their own medium with MLB Network as to how it's reported and how the negotiations are going. And, you know, the Donald Fears, and as I mentioned, the late, great Mark Belanger, and different Pete Gene Orses, the people that were involved in this. Where's the belly for a fight? You know, there used to be a whole line of, you know, skull chewers on the baseball, the boys club, that would tell you where the line was. And we ain't crossing no picket line, and we ain't having no scab players. And like, I don't know where all of that is, or the belly for the millennial types to want to go to war with billionaire corporations, essentially, at this point, which is even different than Ted Turner and George Steinbrenner.
Well, in a vacuum, I think the appetite for war is pretty high, and there's a number of owners, particularly in the small markets, who would like to just see this thing blow up and redraw it pretty dramatically. The thing is, we're not in a vacuum, and again, the sport, and like a lot of other sports, had a very difficult 2020 because of the pandemic, and are just now getting their sea legs again economically. So we're not entirely in a vacuum. And so where there is, I think, some on the management side, even some division between, you know, certain clubs and certain other clubs as to how much they really want to go to war and blow this thing up. And, you know, that's really, you know, the thing that we're all trying to figure out as we get closer and closer to the deadline here, because, you know, independent of the real world circumstances, you know, we'd be fully into it here, but we do exist in context of what's going on around us. And so that's where things get much more complicated and nuanced here.
Well, they almost went to war a year and a half ago in the middle of the plague. They almost didn't get to the field, right? So that to me sort of sparked my, oh, they're still at it. Isn't that cute? 50 years later, you know, not even a plague can get them into a room to figure it out. And half the owners didn't want to play 2 years ago.
Well, and that's the dangerous thing about this, is that a segment of ownership who sort of believes the way things are set up, that it's actually better to play fewer games than more games. And there are teams out there and certain segments of opinion within on the management side that would like to pretty dramatically reduce the length of the regular season and boost out the playoffs when you get the better ratings, the better attendance and all that sort of thing, and really sort of bust around with some of our established norms of what the calendar of the season is and the length of the season is. But that was kind of one of the sort of real kind of aha moments of that whole dispute over what the 2020 season was going to look like, because you actually had management arguing for less baseball, not more.
Eric Fisher is here. He's Sport Business. He's the editor on this side of the pond, doing all things on the sports business side of things here. And there's certainly plenty of NFL stuff, right? I mean, but on the baseball front for franchises, and this is where you and I go back and forth on Masson and whether there ever were going to be Washington Nationals, and you covered all of that, and antitrust, and one of the things the NFL owners don't want to get brought in front of Congress about 650,000 emails, that when the law and Congress and antitrust gets involved, it gets a little messier. Baseball's got international issues with this Montreal-Tampa thing, the Oakland issue. I continue to say to people, and anybody who says, well, they just have Camden Yards in Baltimore and they have crab cakes, they'll just roll the ball out, they'll always be the Orioles. Okay, I mean, I know how the business climate is here. I know how the prettier girl looks. I know what a two-year lease looks like that was signed 2 years ago and I haven't heard a word from. So I'm concerned about the Orioles always because they have no fans. They have no soul. The business community is not behind them. People don't want to come downtown as lovely as Camden Yards is. I live here and I hear what white suburban people say. I've done a whole project on trying to get people back to Baltimore. But Oakland, Tampa, and where this shakes out, and how the NFL thing is shaking out now with lawsuits and moving the team out to LA and indemnifying other owners and all the legal stuff. And I know you're a lawyer, Eric, but the baseball side, give me a little crystal ball of the Orioles business, the Masson business, the baseball business, and then all these people trying to move franchises and where – how did Montreal get back into play? I mean, I'm lost in the woods thinking that they can get a franchise back here or that they're going to share the Rays. I mean, 20 years later, you did Puerto Rico. You tried Las Vegas. But again, where's the crystal ball in the next 5 years for all these franchises?
So the Rays, it's the dumbest thing. The answer to not being able to build one stadium is to propose to build two. It makes no sense. I think – and the union's never going to go along with this whole two city plan. Cause you know, how do you do the payments? How do you do the taxes? How do you do the duty days? Do players have to get two residences? It's a complete non-starter. And I think it's trying to sort of maybe kind of gin up, you know, activity for future expansion to Montreal, which I think may happen way down the road once Oakland, Tampa, and all that gets settled. But this is the dumbest thing. I think the Rays ultimately, and there was a plan in Ybor City for the Rays if Stu Sternberg, the owner, would just cough up his share. And I think ultimately that's what it's going to have to get to. It's a top 15 U.S. media market. The team puts out a competitive product every year. They're just on the wrong side of the bay. That's been the fundamental issue since day one. They're in a bad facility on the wrong side of the bay. You get them in a good facility on the proper side of the bay, and then you start being able to pull in the Orlando market. Everything changes. Stu's just got to pay the bill. You know, it's really that simple.
Well, if you feel like the investment's coming back, it's great. And if you feel like you can really make it work, but after 30 years, and if you're there and you've been digging the ditches and it's not working, I don't know. It hasn't worked in Miami either. And every kid grows up down there with a baseball bat.
But the whole time they've pretty much, you know, they've had an incompetent ownership. And I think the grade is still incomplete on Jeter and company. I think they're trying to do, but there's a lot of damage. They've not had, I think, you know, it's a completely, you know, sort of muddled situation in Miami because they've had bad ownership down there since day one and don't really, you know, if they get to a point where you've got good ownership and competitive teams, I think that situation changes as well because it's a big, robust market and the other teams down there do fine. Now relative to the A's, you know, they're still trying to make a go of it in Oakland. And, you know, there's been some recent movement in trying to get this, you know, complicated Howard Terminal thing off the boards. But I just continue to have my own personal gut feeling. This is not, you know, sort of my own feeling. I think they're going to Vegas ultimately. I think there's a lot of push to try to pair them up with not formally, but just sort of have them join the Raiders and the Knights. And that market as a sports market in Vegas, they're growing by leaps and bounds. Costs are cheaper. Land is more readily available. Everything just kind of works a little easier in Vegas in terms of getting something done. So Oakland might be able to pull out a miracle at this point, but it just seems like the wind is blowing much more strongly in the Vegas direction. And as for the Orioles, it's just, you said it before, just there's been no real tea leaves on that one. It's hard to have a read because, you know, we haven't sort of seen or heard from John Angelos in a long time. And, I don't have a good feel on that one. I don't think giving up that market and giving up that stadium, I think that's a very high bar to cross. I think there's going to be a lot of effort.
But keeping it here for three more decades and having it be shitty is also, that's not feasible either. Having lived it and having lived amongst it in a lacrosse town. I mean, they have a unique problem here. People care about something else here. It's kind of like NASCAR in the South or college football, things you're never going to overcome. The lacrosse thing here is real in a really big way. And my name's Aparicio, man. I've never held a lacrosse stick in my life. And I've been on the radio 30 years, but
new ownership could really change the oxygen on that one. I think if MLB could really sit on Angelos to really make a decision and really bring in a new era.
Who's sitting though? Who's going to play Mr. Big? Who's going to play heavy? I mean, they've never been able to solve him in 30 years, literally, right? I mean, he's sitting on $300 million of Washington's money and they can't get it from him. I mean, it's the damnedest thing. I mean, and lost in it, to your point, the fans that are the stepchildren and all this that, like, yep. There's no incentive to win. There's no incentive to sign. There's no incentive to have a lease. But I do know to compete, they're going to come in here and want a casino and land and development and all the things that Atlanta has given, that other places are trying to get, and that Nashville will eventually give someone with cowboy boots.
All right. So you're still thinking that they're Tennessee bound then?
I don't think they're bound. I think they need to be fixed here, or they're bound for something that's worse than what we have, which isn't very good, which is a team that loses 110 games. Nobody comes to their core audience in the suburbs is chased off by the murder rate and Fox News and like all of that. And they burned every business bridge in the community, you know, over a generation. And those businesses there's not business like that here anymore. The Fortune 500 companies, they don't exist here anymore. So that's the bigger concern for me, is that wherever you go that's new, you get deodorized to all of it. They can't deodorize it here. They could bring in new ownership, but where's the gun that makes that happen? That's the part. No one cares, is my point. I don't hear the mayor here, the governor here, owner, you know, anybody here, business here, anybody here screaming, fix this. They're literally that's gone. Those days are over. And that's the part that worries me the most, I think. At least in other places, there's in Tampa, somebody's saying fix it, save it. Ybor City, there's talk of stuff here. There's no talk of anything here.
Yeah, and that's the interesting thing, because we were just writing today that we've got a transition is afoot in Cleveland, that for the longest time, the Dolans had a very significant minority partner, John Sherman, who then had an opportunity after David Glass died. He became the lead guy in Kansas City. So he bought the Royals and he's doing great out there. So now with Sherman gone, the Dolans want to bring in a new person. And it's a pathway to control thing. It's going to be a little bit like what you had with, Bisciotti and the Ravens. And, we could be in 5 to 10 years time, there's probably going to be a new owner of the Indians. And that wasn't
Guardians.
Guardians. Yes. Sorry.
Hey man, I'm trying to learn too. I mean, I still said the R word last week about the football team,
Understood. Yes. So the owner of the Guardians. And that really, that was without any of the thing that we're talking about here vis-a-vis the Orioles, that, they came to a point in time in their own sort of family lineage that it was, that they were looking you know, to, you know, make a transition and do it on their terms. And this is the kind of thing that we just have not seen out of the Angeloses.
Yeah, well, the Dodgers, the Mets, the Marlins, we could talk about all these teams that have moved around. You know, I'm wondering, when's our turn for sunshine to rain here in Baltimore? Eric Fisher covers all things baseball. He's had his sunshine because he remembers covering Washington baseball when it was going to be in Northern Virginia and like all of that. And look at what they've built down there. Hey, man, we'll be following you along at SportBiz. I love having you on. Love having these deeper conversations about baseball. One day I'd love to discuss Adley Rutschman's stance and batting average and like all of that. But we may be a few years away from that, Eric. Yep. My hair may be even longer then. Hey, I appreciate you, brother. Thanks for coming on.
All right. Be well.
Be well. There he goes. By the way, I see that Joshua tree up on the wall there behind you. So
there's a lot more of them.
Oh, look at you. You got Springsteen up there. REM automatic for the people. Man, you and I, okay, we're going to rock out one day. I'm coming up to Jersey. We're going to a show. That's it. I've made up my mind. I see Pearl Jam in your future, Fisher. All right. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking. Baltimore, positive.